Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Clayton Kershaw, you don't want to bet your mortgage on him in the postseason. That's for sure. You might get rocked. And he was rocked again in a playoff appearance. Some people blaming his manager, but I think that's a little strange because, look, when the manager trusts Kershaw, what are you really saying about Kershaw that you can't trust Kershaw? You know? 855-212-4227. Do you feel bad for Clayton Kershaw? That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. Brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Dan in Boise, Idaho. Dan, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, man?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good, Robin. You know, so I got to say, first of all, I don't really agree with you on a whole lot of things, but I definitely agree with you on this one. Yeah, so it's like, as a person, I feel bad for Kershaw. He's like a good dude. He's done, you know, like a lot of good stuff with his money. But like, as a baseball player, he, like, his job is you get paid a whole lot of money and to go in and to actually pitch really well. So Roberts made a bad move, but it's like managers make bad moves, you know, sometimes. And a player who makes millions of dollars needs to go in and close, you know, get it done. And, you know, it's like I'd have to say as a Red Sox fan last year, I saw Jansen fail eighth inning game after game after game. So it's like he's not lights out for sure. And it's like last year, game six of the World Series, you know, it's like Cora, you know, for the Red Sox, he went with Chris Sale that was on one day rest to actually close the game. He said, you know what, I don't really trust my closer, Kimbrel, like I'm going to go with a starter, and he got it done. And it's like if Chris Sale would have failed in that spot, like it would have been on, you know, manager and Chris Sale for failing.
Yeah, I mean, is it the typical spot for Clayton Kershaw? Maybe not. But he wasn't being asked to do something that he doesn't do. He was being asked to pitch. And, you know, in fact, he should take it as a sign of respect that his manager still trusted him in that situation and was still willing to give him a moment in that situation. And look, he didn't rise up. What do you want to say? And it's the pattern now. You know, the exception would be if he did perform. And if he did perform, people would have celebrated him, by the way. They would have been like, Kershaw exercises his postseason demons. But because he didn't, you know, you can't look for a way around it. He's the guy that was out on the mound. You might even disagree with the choice. Fine. But if you disagree with the choice, it's because you didn't believe in Clayton Kershaw. That's just the truth. 855-212-4227. All right, time to get to my NFL picks of the week. Did I lose again? I feel like I've been bitten by like really close spreads a couple times recently that swung my record where I'm thinking I'm going to be like 4-2 or something, and I wind up 2-4.
Last week it was 2-5.
Ugh. So don't listen to me. What's my overall record now?
So now you're 8-under at 11-19 overall.
Yeah. So don't listen to me, but here comes some picks for this week because I will continue to do it. I will not coward out. But yeah, not a great start to the season for me after what was an impressive season last year where I was about 8-over by the end of the year. I feel like I had a lot of games last week where I lost it by about a point, but that's why they're good at making those spreads. Let me start with a couple games. Yeah, where I'm just going to take a good team getting points. And I feel like that's a decent enough philosophy to take a good team getting points. One of those teams, the Philadelphia Eagles, +3 against the Minnesota Vikings. Philly was very impressive in their last performance. Kirk Cousins, not impressive, obviously, so far on the year. It almost feels like I'm being suckered into a game like that, but I'm going to take it because, again, a good team getting points. I'll go with the Eagles plus three against the Vikings. The Saints, same situation. Saints plus 2.5 over the Jaguars. You know, it doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. It seems the Saints are a quality squad top to bottom, which would indicate to you that they should be one of the favorites for the Super Bowl this year. So the Saints plus 2.5 over the Jaguars. I mean, both the Saints and the Eagles just getting points in almost every situation, I think I would jump at, and I will do the same here with New Orleans. Next up, this one was tough because, you know, like, you don't know what to make of the Cleveland Browns, where it felt like, you know, for much of the season I had a read on them, and I was like, you know what, the Browns just aren't good. They were hyped a lot, but they just weren't good. And the one time I picked against them was the one time they had a good performance, and they put some, what, 40-something points on the board. They followed that up with a really poor performance on Monday Night Football when I actually trusted them. And now I'm going to go back to what my instincts were about the Browns for the majority of the year. Hopefully they don't prove me wrong again. If I lose this one, I'm never touching a Browns game the rest of the year. I'll take the Seahawks minus 1.5 over the Browns. The Browns have just not shown themselves to be a quality team. And, you know, there's a reason they are the Cleveland Browns. Coming up next, I'll go with the Cowboys minus 7 over the Jets. People are down on the Cowboys right now. They've had a couple of rough weeks. I still think the Cowboys are a good team. I do not think the Jets are a good team. I don't think that's even really an opinion, right? The Jets are objectively not a good team. And the Cowboys, if there is a bounce back to be had, it would certainly be against the Jets minus 7 points. Give me the Chiefs minus 4 over the Texans. I've been burned with the Chiefs a little bit recently, but I think at home, they got to get that righted. And, you know, this is still an explosive offense. Minus 4 points. That's the kind of bounce back game I think you could see from Kansas City. You know, I'm almost suckered into taking the Chiefs anytime the spread is under a touchdown, but there it is right there. And then the Packers minus 3.5 over the Lions. I've been convinced by the Packers. I know Detroit has been better than almost anyone could have reasonably expected this year, so it's not a foregone conclusion even that the Packers win that game. But the Packers have gotten everything clicking of late. They've been one of the better teams in the NFL over the course of the season so far. So when you see them just needing to win by over a field goal at home, it leans toward me taking the Packers. So I will go Packers minus 3.5 over the Lions. So it's Eagles plus 3 against the Vikings, Saints plus 2.5 over the Chargers, Seahawks minus 1.5 over the Browns, Cowboys minus 7 over the Jets, Chiefs minus 4 over the Texans, and the Packers minus 3.5 over the Detroit Lions. Let us cross our fingers. I just need one of those big weeks. I just need, like, you know, give me a 5-1. 5-1 on the board, and I'm right back in business. That's just give me one of those. I'm due for one of those. It's going to happen at some point. It can't keep going the other way. Because, you know, I mean, it could. That's how gambling works. That's how people lose money. Most people don't win money on gambling. But it's fun. It's fun. So there you have it. My confidence at the lowest point that's ever been. I feel ashamed, and I apologize. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. You know, I have been asking you if you feel bad for Clayton Kershaw. You also have the Astros and the Yankees getting ready to start. You know, that being looked upon by many, I think, as the real World Series. But, you know, it's funny, baseball is such a strange sport because you could say, yeah, the Astros and the Yankees is the real World Series. But didn't everyone just say it was going to be the Dodgers, the Yankees, or the Astros? Wasn't that what everyone was saying? And the Dodgers are now gone, courtesy of the Nationals. And the Nationals just took care of business last night as well. So baseball is a sport that is built to be played over 162. And I know it's been more dominated by the top-heavy teams as of late. Still, when you get into a seven-game situation, you know, one pitcher can get hot, one hitter can get hot, and things can change. You could see a team like the Dodgers ousted by the Nationals, which, you know, it's one of those quirky ways that baseball is different than other sports. I mean, in many ways, it's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. In other ways, it is the ultimate team sport because, you know, you need the entire team in order to get through a season as long as it is just to make the playoffs. And, you know, when you talk about it being it's an individual sport based on your performance, right? Like, your performance is not altered by someone else. But it's a team sport in the sense where Bryce Harper can be on the Nationals last year. They can be a failure. Bryce Harper's off the Nationals this year. Phillies don't make the playoffs, and the Nationals are doing what they were expected to do a year ago. You know, Mike Trout has, I believe, never won a playoff game. You know, and people will tell you that Mike Trout is arguably on his way to becoming the best baseball player of all time, or in the mix, at least in the conversation, for best baseball player of all time. So it's not like other sports. That alone tells you it's not like other sports, right? Because if there was any other sport, if we were talking about football, if we were talking about a quarterback, or, man, if we were talking about an NBA superstar, and somebody was saying they're in the running for the greatest of all time, they'd never won a playoff game, you get laughed out of the conversation immediately. Just guffawed out of the conversation. What are you even doing broaching the topic?
Yeah, we've seen it firsthand what one guy can do. I mean, LeBron James could carry a team, you know?
Yeah, that basketball, maybe an individual can carry a team more than any other sport. Football, quarterback can elevate the sport. Baseball just doesn't work that way. Just doesn't work that way. So I do think the Astros and the Yankees are the two best teams, but I don't think that necessarily means one of them is 100% going to win the World Series. We'll talk to Kyle Glazer, national MLB writer for Baseball America, about that and more coming up next. You can also weigh in on any of the topics we've touched on in the show, the NBA and China, 855-212-4227. Zion and the impact he's already made. Whether the Patriots, it's time to complain about a lack of parity in the NFL because of the Patriots. And if you feel bad for Clayton Kershaw, 855-212-4227. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
Not the typical bump in music, but I'm rocking with it today. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm thumping my pen against the paper here. Talking about Clayton Kershaw before, and I want to bring in somebody else to get his thoughts on this before I get back to you at 855-212-4227. Of course, as well as the other issues with the Major League Baseball playoffs. And my guest is Kyle Glazer, national MLB writer for Baseball America. And Kyle, you know, speaking of being put in by the coach, one of the criticisms of Dave Roberts was putting Clayton Kershaw into a situation that is not best suited to his skill set. But my thing is, I feel bad for Clayton Kershaw as a guy. You know, he's a pitcher. He wasn't asked to do something foreign to him, even if it was in a different situation in the game. And what does it really say about Kershaw if the chief criticism of Roberts is that he shouldn't have trusted Kershaw?
Well, I know I was there covering Game 5. I think it really is. It kind of goes both ways, right? It's the manager's job to put their players in their best positions to succeed, which Roberts did not do. But then it's also on the player to execute, which Kershaw did not do. It's not an all or nothing, only one person at fault here. It was kind of a joint issue there. And I mean, it was an unfortunate situation. I mean, I think everyone with a heart felt bad for Kershaw, seeing how miserable he looked in the Dodgers dugout. But, you know, we've seen this happen. I covered the 2017 World Series, the 2018 World Series, and Kershaw has had some decent postseason appearances. But, you know, on the whole, we see this happening over and over and over again where, you know, something goes wrong and it ends up costing the Dodgers big time.
You know, baseball is such a, it makes sense that baseball was at the forefront of the analytics movement because there are so many isolated events in a game, right? So over the course of a season, you're going to expect the statistics to tell you the truth. But in the, you know, analytics quest, there was always that question of whether clutch existed or whatnot. And to me, clutch was always just being the same as you were during the regular, you know, like Derek Jeter has a reputation or had a reputation for being clutch. He really was the same player in the postseason as he was in the regular season. I mean, does anyone exemplify the human element of baseball more than Clayton Kershaw? Because how else could you explain the pattern you just referenced other than, you know, somehow the moment gets to him and changes his performance?
Well, when you watch him pitch, and it was really noticeable in his game two start as well as game five a little bit, his tempo changes. You know, in the regular season, you watch Clayton Kershaw. He works pretty quickly. He's able to kind of just go right after hitters, even with stuff that's, you know, a little lesser than it was in his prime. You know, it was really noticeable for me watching him in game two. He was not comfortable. You could see the tempo was not there. He didn't look comfortable on the mound. And we've seen that a couple of times. And you're right. You know, you see the analytics movement and people say when bad things happen, oh, it's small sample size, or it's just luck. No, watch the players. See what's happening. You will see guys who are visibly over swinging. You will see pitchers who visibly are not comfortable on the mound in big situations. And just speaking, you know, to Kershaw, I mean, you can see it that the tempo was just not there. And as a result of nerves, it's a result of discomfort, and that affects performance.
Robin Lundberg talking to Kyle Glazer, national MLB writer for Baseball America. Now, you have a big series coming up between the Astros and the Yankees. And I would say, you know, it's hard to say any series is the World Series until the World Series, because the Dodgers were in that group with them. And the Dodgers, as we just talked about, were bounced. But first question, do you think these are clearly the two best teams?
I think the answer is yes, definitely, just because you see the depth both teams have, the lineup. You see the number of arms they can throw at you, both the starting rotation and the bullpen. I will say, you know, people are discounting the Nationals. This was one of the best teams in baseball since May 24th record-wise, right with the Yankees and Astros. This is a lineup that 1-8 can really kill you. And anytime you have a team with, you know, Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, you know, Daniel Hudson and Sean Doolittle have been good relievers. I think they're going to be competitive. You know, and then the Cardinals, they continue to find ways to win. So, yes, the Yankees and Astros are the two best teams. By the same token, I don't think this is necessarily the World Series. I think that that doesn't give enough credit to the Nationals in particular, and also the Cardinals to a degree.
How do you assess the individual matchup, though, between the Astros and the Yankees? Who do you like in the series?
You have to give the edge to the Astros. Even though the Yankees are fresh after sweeping their division series, the Astros had to go a little further to dispatch the Rays. I think, again, you look at the Astros, what they did over the course of the regular season, how dangerous that lineup is. It matches up really well with the Yankees. And then it does, you know, you have to give the edge in starting pitching to the Astros as well, although the Yankees do have, you know, some of the horses. They're a little healthier than they have been. It's going to be a great series. I don't think either team, if they win, you could classify it as an upset. It's going to be very evenly matched. I think we'll go at least 6 or 7. But I do think you have to give the edge to the Astros just based on everything they did during the regular season.
You know, one of the things I've heard, I guess you could call it conventional wisdom by now, in a sense, is that the Astros starting pitching will get the best of the Yankees, in a sense, because the Yankees are reliant on the home run, or too reliant on the home run. Is that something you agree with or not?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think we do see, we do see consistently, you know, the teams that have success in the postseason, they all hit for very high batting averages as well as high slugging percentages. Teams that can consistently keep the line moving, put the ball in play, have a lot of success. We saw it with the Red Sox last year, the Astros the year before. But this Yankees team is not really an all-or-nothing home run team. I mean, they consistently, again, they can put the ball in play with the best of them. I don't necessarily see the Yankees as the epitome of, you know, swing for the fences, all or nothing. Like, you know, the A's are guilty of that sometimes. The Dodgers are guilty of that sometimes. And as a result, those two teams have struggled with postseason success. I think the Yankees do enough in terms of making contact as well as hitting home runs and controlling the strike zone that I don't really think that's an issue for them.
Kyle, appreciate the time and the analysis this morning, man. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime.
Kyle Glazer, national MLB writer for Baseball America. 855-212-4227. You can weigh in as well. Let's go to Jimmy in Arizona. Jimmy, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Good morning.
You are welcome. Good morning to you also.
Hey, I'm in beautiful Kingman, but I'm a Chicagoan at heart. Born and raised, it's in my heart. I watched DeRocher, I watched Eddie Stanky, I watched Jim Fry, Don Zimmer, and currently Rick Renteria. Just blatantly use relief pitchers like they never went to preschool. And I got to tell you that I feel bad for Kershaw. I love that kid. I love him. I love him like I love Sandy Koufax. And really, I guess you can defend to an extent Roberts using him that way. But when he stayed with Kelly after Kelly pitched that perfect ninth, and then he left him out there to dry when he was throwing balls in the dirt and he lost his command, he was throwing strictly fastballs. I think Roberts ought to go.
Oh, you know, Jimmy, you don't have to misconstrue what I was saying before as a defense of Roberts. It wasn't really a defense of Roberts. It was just, I think people are going too far in defense of Kershaw when ultimately he's out on the mound. He's supposed to be an all-time great pitcher. I don't care when you're out there, you know, record a couple outs, you know, and he was only able to record one freaking out.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And like I said, I feel, you know, heartily sorry for the kid, man. I kind of feel bad for Roberts making the move, too. I mean, I wouldn't defend it, but I wouldn't disagree with it. But after he stayed with Kelly in the 10th and just I just watched the game evaporate, you could feel it coming. You could feel it coming.
Yeah, and again, what does it tell you? What does it tell you about Clayton Kershaw if the – takeaway is you shouldn't have gone to Clayton Kershaw. How could you go to Clayton Kershaw? I mean, what does that say about Clayton Kershaw? Honestly, I mean, I feel bad for him too. That sucks. I don't want a great player's career to be defined as being a choker in the playoffs, but Clayton Kershaw's choked in the playoffs repeatedly.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
Doing the work of the people. You know, somebody's got to do it. Might as well be me, a hero amongst men. Dan in Vermont. Dan, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
I just wanted to call and say I love the show. I love postseason baseball, and I hate excuses we make for professional athletes. But at this stage in the season, like, every team is good. And I'm thinking if I'm managing that must-win game, Kershaw doesn't make my list in the postseason. I got to go to, like, you know, the Yankees, Braves, and Red Sox guys like Pettit, Smoltz, Glavine, and Maddox. Think about Schillinger and even Lester. And as much as I didn't like him, Jack Morris was the man. And if I think about the Dodgers, I'm probably not taking Kershaw. I'm probably taking Oral Hershiser of, like, everybody. So Kershaw, great kind of, like, division guy, help you win the season, 20 wins. But he's not the go-to guy that I need him to win that must game. I just kind of wanted your feedback on that list.
No, I mean, I don't even think he belongs on, you know, to be mentioned with those guys. You know, when it comes to the playoffs, I mean, there are a bunch of random pitchers you would take before you took Clayton Kershaw, right? Like, who would you rather have? Hideki Matsui? I was getting, obviously, he's a clutch performer in the World Series. You know, that's the kind of guy that can show up big. But when you're talking about, you know, pitchers in the postseason, there are a bunch of guys who have risen to the occasion more than Clayton Kershaw has. And I mean, what do you want to say? You can't. You know, you'd rather have, you know, Yankees fans might have said in the past they would have rather had Hideki Matsui than Alex Rodriguez in the postseason before 2009. But, you know, 2009, A-Rod turned that around. Clayton Kershaw hasn't, and Matsui was the World Series MVP, coincidentally enough. The Kershaw's never had that moment, right? He's never had that moment. So there are so many guys that you would take over him in a playoff series. I mean, doesn't belong in the same breath as a lot of those guys. And again, I think the way this story has been told says that well enough. The manager made a mistake because he went to Clayton Kershaw. Bottom line, that's what people are saying. And that speaks enough about Clayton Kershaw. All right, time to get to every topic I have not as of yet in another one. All right, Anthony, what is up first?
We'll stick with baseball for the time being. 8 managerial opens now in Major League Baseball after Gabe Kapler was fired this week by the Phillies. So you have the Mets, Cubs, Angels, Padres, Royals, Pirates, Giants, and now Phillies all looking for a new manager. Which job is the most appealing?
Ooh, I mean, I guess I would lean with the Cubs. Simply because of the track record of the guy putting the team together. I mean, that's the best answer I can give you. I mean, you just gave me a lot of teams. How many? No, I have to like take a second to pause. Can you repeat? No, you don't have to repeat. I'll go with the Cubs because of the track record of the guy running it and Theo Epstein. So I think that's my best answer. You know, I will side with management in those cases, and he's been the best, most proven person at the management level amongst the teams that you just mentioned. Now there may be a little bit more pressure involved there or expectations all of a sudden in Chicago. But, yeah, I think that's the best answer.
Oakland's mayor said that MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred warned city officials that the Athletics could move to Las Vegas if they don't drop a lawsuit that has halted the team's plan for a new stadium in the city. Should the A's follow the Raiders to Las Vegas?
You know what? Here's what I want to know. Like, would people make time for a baseball game in Las Vegas? Because you could easily say, no, that's not what I want to do. But I could argue that one of the things about baseball that's appealing is that baseball doesn't have to be the only focus of what you're doing when you're at base. You know, like, Vegas nights start late, right? So you go to a baseball game, they got a sports book and a bar and all that in there. People, like, might not be focused on the game necessarily, but they're like, hey, let's go hang out at the baseball game. So you catch a little bit of it, you go place your bets, you walk around. You know, one of the appeals of going to a baseball game is because people like drinking beer outside anyway. You know, like all that stuff. I could see the appeal of baseball in Vegas. I think it's necessarily going to happen? I don't know. Should it happen? I don't know. But that's what's more interesting to me is how baseball would thrive in Vegas, because it doesn't – your snap judgment isn't putting those two things together. Like, oh, yeah, baseball and Vegas, they go together. But I wonder if it would actually be a better marriage than most people think because of the late starts in Vegas and because baseball is the, you know, the sport that requires the least attention to be paid to it from the people. Because you don't go to I guess you can go to any game and do something else. But you the baseball experience is more about the experience than it is about the game oftentimes.
So the rumor is that Mike Tomlin is Dan Snyder's top candidate to replace Jay Gruden in D.C. Tomlin addressed the Redskins coaching rumor this week by saying, I'm not worried about that. Is Tomlin the guy that can finally turn around the Redskins?
Look, Tomlin is a proven coach, right? I know he has taken some criticism at various times, and I know he's been owned by Bill Belichick, which is unfortunate for him overall in his legacy. But when you look at his record, this is likely going to be the first losing season he ever experienced. He's never had a losing season. He has a career record of 126-70. That is outstanding in 13 years. He, you know, has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seasons where he's coached a team that won more than 10 games. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been to another Super Bowl. I mean, he's a proven coach. So if you're just talking about if there's a coach that could turn around the team, yeah, he's a guy I have faith in. The problem is they're one of those situations where the problems go above the coach. And I can't say anybody could turn that situation around as long as Dan Snyder is in charge. It's Dan Snyder and James Dolan. They're the two owners in sports right now who are talked about the most as the root cause of their franchise's struggles. So do I have faith in Mike Tomlin as a coach? Yes. Do I have faith that anyone can turn Washington around? No.
We talked about the Patriots earlier, the only other undefeated team in the NFL, the San Francisco 49ers, 4-0 for the first time since 1990. So, Robin, are you a believer in the 49ers? Is San Francisco a legitimate Super Bowl contender?
I think those are two separate questions. Am I a believer in the 49ers? Yes. At this point, you know, you are what, you know, your record says you are, whatever the cliche is, and eventually you got to take it at face value. They're 4-0. They're plus 70. Am I to them being a Super Bowl contender yet? That I need a little bit more. You know, they need a signature win against a really good team. That would be what would put me over the top there. They've played the Bucks, the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Browns so far this year. Now, they've been relatively dominant. You know, the closest game was against Pittsburgh, but they blew the Bengals out. They obviously blew the Browns out. Their defense has been outstanding. So I do think that the 49ers are a good team. There's no question about that. But before I'm ready to say they're a Super Bowl contender, I would like to see a little bit more, and I'd like to see it against a little bit higher level of competition. So I think those are two separate questions. The first answer, are they for real? Yes. The second answer, are they a Super Bowl contender? Let me wait and see a bit.
So Richard Sherman, he accused Baker Mayfield of refusing to shake his hand prior to their Monday night matchup, and then a video came out showing that that wasn't the case. On Wednesday, Sherman apologized for incorrectly stating what happened in the situation, as if he would apologize directly to Mayfield. Sherman confirmed he would. So did Richard Sherman take it too far with Baker Mayfield?
Well, of course he took it too far. I mean, of course. If he made something up, yeah. That would be taking it. I don't know. Here's what I don't understand. How that happened. That's what I don't get. Like, did Baker Mayfield say something to Richard Sherman that left such a negative impression on his head that he just, like, imagined that he didn't shake his hand? Did Richard Sherman have a negative perception of Baker Mayfield that was amplified by something else he saw, and therefore, for whatever reason, his head went to the idea that he didn't shake his hand? That's what I don't understand. Did he just feel like piling on in the criticism that Baker Mayfield has taken? I don't understand the motivation for saying something didn't happen when it clearly did. Now, I don't want to call him a liar, per se. I mean, that was inaccurate. It was wrong. I hope it wasn't just a lie. I hope there was something in Richard Sherman's head that made him remember this a certain way when it didn't take that way. Didn't take place that way, because otherwise he's just a liar, and I would hope not to think that about him, because he's been on point about, you know, other stuff in the past. So I don't know. I don't know how that happens or why that happened.
All right, finally, Brie Larson said this week, a.k.a. Captain Marvel, that the Marvel stars are passionate about an all-woman movie, but standalones might be the safer bet. So what do you think? Will we eventually get an all-female Avengers flick?
I mean, it could happen. Here's my question. What's the plot for it? Right? Like, why is it all women? I have no problem with an all-women movie, but you have to make it interesting in the sense of, you know, the reason that it's all women, because the Avengers are a team with men, women, people of different backgrounds, and the like. But I'm not against it. No, I'm for it. I like the scene in Endgame where it was, you know, it was obviously done with a purpose to have one scene where it was all the female characters coming and uniting. But I thought it was cool. It was a cool, like, women's empowerment moment. You know, my daughter, Ronnie, when Captain Marvel came out, it was one of those things you got to say, hey, this is a girl superhero. You know, she's cool. She's strong. She's powerful. So I like that as a message. I'm curious how you make sense of that plot-wise. You know, because it could come off the wrong way plot-wise, because why is it all female characters when, there's no all-male character movie either. That we've moved in a good direction in that way, where they've been pretty inclusive across the board when it comes to Marvel. And that stuff. You know, I saw, Anthony, you see Jennifer Aniston said there's too many Marvel movies now, too. I'm interested
another one, yeah. Jumping all over the Marvel movies.
Jennifer Aniston going to lead a Martin Scorsese movie. I thought Samuel L. Jackson said something good about it. He's like, he's cool. You know, he can say what he wants, but there are people that don't like Martin Scorsese's movies also. I get back.
Who are those people? Who doesn't like Martin Scorsese films?
You know, I don't like mafia movies. I just never have cared. And they're some of the more popular movies. Obviously Martin Scorsese makes good movies, right? Like, that's a subjective thing, but as objectively subjective as you can be, he makes good movies, and I've enjoyed some of them. But I'm not as into the mafia movies, even like to The Godfather and stuff. I just don't care about that, like, culture or the portrayal of those families and the like. So it's not my thing, but I would never say it's not cinema or not good. You know, people have said, obviously those things are good. They've stood the test of time. People love them. Just not personally my thing. And I don't understand how people aren't able to, like, express something like that well enough to not get people angry. Cinema. It's not cinema. Jennifer Aniston. How many Marvel movies are there in a year anyway? Like two or three? It's not like the entire film industry. You know, I think there's a, if you wanted to complain about something, it's just like remaking everything. Would be the lack of creativity and originality.
Original ideas, yeah.
At least the Marvel stuff is original, right? It's like, you know, they're not remaking everything. What's a great Jennifer?
Don't forget about the DC movies too. You get a couple, two, three Marvel movies, but DC as well. They're rolling out what, three next year? Birds of Prey, Wonder Woman. Yeah, I thought there was another DC movie next year.
Has Jennifer Aniston been in a great movie? She was in Office Space, which I enjoy.
Yes, that's a very good movie.
The Object of My Affection.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a great movie.
Is it? I'll take your word for it. What else has she been in? What was that? We Are the Millers. I that was pretty funny. With Jason Sudeikis, right? I'm trying to think. Has she been in a great movie? She's been in a bunch of movies with Adam Sandler, hasn't she? That new Adam Sandler movie looks good. Have you seen the preview for that? The Uncut Gems? Horrible Bosses was all right. Yeah, I don't know, like, if Jennifer Aniston is necessarily should be the authority, though. it seems like there should be room for Martin Scorsese movies, Jennifer Aniston movies, and Marvel movies, as far as I'm concerned. All right, I'll be back same time, same place next week. In the meantime, you can get CBSSportsRadio.com. Grab the podcast for any portion of the show you may have missed. As always, I appreciate all the interaction that I've gotten throughout the show. I'm not just saying this. It does mean a lot to me that so many people like to listen and like to interact. Until then, I'll see you next Saturday. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.